Hello, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to the Zelda Universe podcast. We have a special edition this time around. And for this special edition, we are having a roundtable discussion. Joining me this evening, we have on my metaphorical left, Jody.
Hi, my name is Jody, or Trader Jody is what I go by on the interwebs. I am a game master, a dungeon master, and Saturday mornings, I run Tears of the Realms, which is a cipher-powered tabletop RPG that is Legend of Zelda themed. And we've been playing, this is actually our second campaign for Zelda Universe. We've been playing for about 6 years at this point.
Very impressive. Below Jody, we have Amanda.
Hi, I'm Amanda. I host Zelda Weekly, which is one of our videos that we've been on. Hey, it's because A, nothing's been happening in the Zelda world, and B, I've had a bunch of equipment fault, so I'm having to change. Sorry, I'm getting tongue-tied. A, nothing's happening, and B, equipment stuff, working on upgrading stuff. So yeah, that's a thing. And then I also show up places and just talk about Zelda. So if Zelda conversations are happening, I'm bound to show up.
And that's why we have you here. Thank you so much. Kaden, you are our final participant.
I am happy to be here. I am Kaden. On the interwebs, I go by the K-Dog. And I am technically classified as ZU talent. What that means, I don't know. But
you're a very talented person. That's what it means.
I try to be. I try to be. I will be, hopefully, being more participative in these events. But yeah, I'm just looking forward to showing up more. Yeah, getting my name out there, getting my face out there. Not in this case, though, but, you know.
Yeah, we got your voice out there. That's what matters.
Yeah, that's all that matters. I'm happy to be
here. Really, I mean, your voice is really your face to your ears, so.
That is profound. I really enjoy that.
We're going to be talking about stuff for a little while. My name is Connor, and I am your host and manager for the Zelda Universe podcast. We got the official announcement December. Was it December or November? End of last year.
Yeah.
I want to say December. Maybe?
Something like that. Someone can fact check us on that.
Recently,
we finally got word that it is official. The Legend of Zelda is getting a adaptation into a movie. It is confirmed live action. And this is now the timeline that we are sitting in. So my first question, initial impression.
It was about to happen.
It was about to happen. It's like, well, we knew it was happening.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense, but it's also made sense for like 15 years at this point. So,
they were talking about a Zelda movie and Nintendo Power back when Lord of the Rings came out because everybody wanted Orlando Bloom to be Link.
Mm-hmm. Wait, that was a thing?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I mean, it makes sense with how popular the Mario movie was. I think people are finally forgetting we had a really good Mortal Kombat movie that came out. We're starting to see people that are actually taking video games seriously and turning them into movies instead of the video game movies that we saw in the 90s and early 2000s, where the creators of these movies considered video games this kind of lower art form, or not even an art form. It was just something that kids do. And so they had to find a way to elevate it. And when you do that, you get things like the 90s Mario Brothers movie, which is a train wreck.
It was an acid trip is what it was.
It is an incredibly entertaining train wreck, but it is a train wreck. So I think we're finally getting directors and producers and things like that that are getting their head out of whatever orifice they have shoved it into and are starting to realize, no, these video games, which is a multi-billion dollar industry now that rivals the movie industry as far as revenue, these people can actually tell interesting stories that audiences want to see. And that's kind of my hope for this, is that they allow the source material to speak instead of going, well, this is a movie, so we must elevate it to movie standards. Mm-hmm.
I admit I have appreciated Detective Pikachu. Super Mario movie was just nostalgia entertainment. The Sonic movies, both of them,
were excellent. So good.
And it actually has me looking forward to the third one. And I never thought I'd look forward to a video game movie in this kind of manner. I am terrified for this movie. Absolutely terrified. The Legend of Zelda is my baby. I love this series to death. And I am just... I'm prepared for them to screw it up.
Yes.
This is my anxiety.
Well, it can either be really, really good or really, really bad. It's going to go one of those two ways. I don't think there's any way it's going to be like in the middle.
Just don't let M. Night Shyamalan direct it, and I think we're in a good place.
Correct.
And cast me.
Obviously, we're casting Manic. Caden?
Yeah.
Leading up to the Mario movie, I think the Mario movie was a big turning point when it came to video game adaptations for film. It was very much a sigh of relief when it came out and was pretty good. Sonic 2 as well, I think, was a really good movie. I was gushing the entire time in the theater.
I think a lot of people thought that Sonic was a fluke and that Detective Pikachu wasn't technically a video game movie. It was a Pokemon movie. And I think with the release of the Mario movie, people are starting to realize that, oh, no, wait, it's a video game movie and video game movies can be good.
Yeah, yeah. Sonic 1, I think, is the Sonic 1 movie. I can take it. But Sonic 2 leaned more into the video game stuff. It felt like they were actually getting comfortable with the video game stuff.
Got Colleen O'Shaughnessy back as Tails, and they did do stunt casting with Tails, which was awesome.
I really wish they had done that with more people in general, but that's that's neither here nor there.
I was still happy just to get Colleen. Like, the fact that she was in it, I was like, all right, they're making at least one good choice here. But the movie was wonderful.
Yeah. I think voice actors, especially with these kind of roles that they're used to, with like, you know, animated characters, I think they need to be more like sought after when it comes to film adaptations.
I think that's a big thing. Those of us who have, obviously with this, when we're talking video games, those of us who have enjoyed, before we actually started recording, we went for 15 minutes talking about The Last Airbender, a TV series. And as I'm thinking through all this kind of stuff, the role of a voice actor in any kind of media, at least in the West, is really only enjoyed and appreciated by us who actually take that. But if you're not participating in any kind of that kind of thing, video games, cartoons, they tend to be seen as lesser by the media producing people as a whole.
Well, in Hollywood, for decades, the voice acting community, because it's existed for a very, very long time, and it has been relegated to even below like television acting. Like, for a long time in Hollywood and Broadway, there was this huge rivalry where Broadway actors were the real actors and movie actors were lazy because they didn't have to emote and they didn't have to do it 8 days a week or 8 times a week and stuff like that. And then film actors were like, well, Broadway actors are... they overact everything on film. They can catch very minor things. And so we're the real actors. And then TV was relegated to, oh, that's for film actors that can't act. And then cartoons and voiceover were even less so. And then we got Aladdin with Robin Williams, and people started realizing that you could have these incredibly powerful vocal performances by really big, really talented actors. And we finally start getting kind of the respect for the voice acting community started. But it wasn't until like the mid-2010s when the Screen Actors Guild, which most of these actors belong to the Screen Actors Guild and were getting nothing out of it because the Screen Actors Guild couldn't have cared less about them. They finally start fighting for their voice actors with, I think it was in like 2015 or something like that, where they started doing things like mandatory session lengths and things about where if you're going to be doing really difficult voice acting, like especially for video games, you will have like, it used to be you would have like 8 hour sessions where all you were doing is going, and it would destroy your voice. There are voice actors who permanently damaged their voice because there were no kind of limitations or anything like that. And the Screen Actors Guild was doing nothing to protect them. So when that started changing and things like Critical Role happened and people were starting to recognize voice actors as opposed to just Hollywood film actors in that, we started seeing this progression to, yeah, voice acting's a real thing and these are real actors. I think we're kind of starting to see the same kind of process with other forms of media. You know, anime is allowed to be a real form of media and not just for those weebos that live in basements. And video games is an actual form of entertainment that tells interesting stories. I mean, we had The Last of Us TV show that got reviews. Some were, I think most of them were very, very positive. There were a few that were less so.
I enjoyed the series myself.
The we had the Uncharted movie, which did not go as well. But I mean, Hollywood is finally acknowledging they are not the sole keepers of art and entertainment in the world. And part of that is kind of bleeding over into the video game industry. And we're starting to get things that people actually could care about. You know, the Witcher TV series, great example. And I think the thing that made the Witcher TV series as good as it was at first was people like Henry Cavill in it. And I think that's what Henry Cavill is a massive, not only is he a massive Witcher video game fan, he's also a massive fan of the books and has read the books that came out a decade before any Witcher games happened. And he went and he read those and he was an advocate on site for the source material. And I think it made it a better project. The same thing happened with Jenna Ortega on the Wednesday series. She was an advocate for the source material on set. And I think to pivot back to Zelda, I think that's what we need for the Zelda movie is we need the actors themselves to advocate for the source material. Because the writers in general right now are a very, very mixed bag. You have some very talented writers and then some absolutely worthless writers. And you really can't tell the difference because they will mix them and put them on the same show. And so it's very hard to figure out why this particular show was written so badly when most of the same people were on this particular show in this particular episode and it worked really, really well. It's because the good ones actually got to get their stuff in and the bad writers didn't. And the same thing is true about directors as well. We have some phenomenal directors out there and then some directors that do not understand acting in any way, shape, or form and will give really, really bad direction. And then you get subpar performances and weird things that happen on screen. They go, why would the actor make that choice?
Let's talk a little bit more about what the Zelda movie needs. So we're going in that direction. What does this movie need in order to be successful? And however you want to define success, whether or not it's a financial success or satisfaction for you as a longtime Zelda fan, what does this movie need?
So
I think it needs an original story, first of all, because if it goes with one of the games, it's just going to make fans mad because it's not, there's no way to satisfy fans with a movie adaptation of any of the games, really, just because there's so much in it. And, you know, Zelda fans are, you know, they're vocal and they're very passionate. And
especially when it comes to continuity and lore.
Oh my gosh. Oh, we could have a whole nother discussion about that.
It's me. I'm Zelda fans.
Yay!
It's got to have its own story. We still, of course, have to have Link, Zelda, and Ganon. I think that's what people are going to want, at least the minimum there.
Oh, you don't want a Tingle story, Amanda?
I mean, I would play a Tingle story. I that would be a nice bonus. He can be in there. I've played Tingle's Rosie Roopie Land.
Give us a Tingle B plot.
Tingle B plot.
I want Linkle to come back.
I so want Linkle to come back.
I think Barkle. That would,
Fawful?
Barkle. That's Tingle's dog.
Oh. I was like, wait, Fawful? That's Mario. Oh yeah, 100%. Linkle, I think, would be a really cool, like, movie starts. Link's in the starting village. Oh, there's a girl in the village that looks kind of like Link, you know. Little Easter egg.
You can be his sister.
Oh, that too.
Yeah, but who names their kids Link and Linkle?
Considering the names that exist in the real world, I would actually buy it.
Yeah.
Fair point.
Yeah.
You don't even necessarily have to like call her by name. It just needs to be obvious that it's like, oh, here's a fun little reference. She doesn't even have to be like a main character. It could just be, oh, there's this person in the background who's working with all the cuckoos.
Yeah.
Kind of like it's what they did like in Wreck-It Ralph and the Mario movie. Like you would see the references to different things. Mm-hmm. And if you knew what it was, then it was exciting and cool to see all those nice little Easter eggs there or just different things from the series. But if you didn't, then it didn't really matter.
Yeah, it definitely needs to be natural and fitting what is going on. I think the number one thing that I need from this, I've tried to boil down what I find in common with all of the Zelda games, and that is its tone.
Mm-hmm.
We've had different ranges of difficulty levels, plot lines, and even some very dramatic changes in, you know, how light or dark a game is. And yet at the same time, from Majora's Mask through to Spirit Tracks, there is an undeniable tone to the Zelda franchise that is very unique. Mm-hmm. And that, more than anything else, I think is what they need to capture in order to make it feel like a Zelda game.
Absolutely. There is definitely... kind of a whimsical quality that even in the darkest Majora's Mask, Twilight Princess, Tears of the Kingdom, even in like the darkest series, there's still just like that happy goofiness that's still there, but it's not so just over the top stupid goofy either. And I think the problem that I worry is that it's just going to be another just medieval fantasy of people running around with dirty hair.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what Zelda is.
I think it's definitely going to have to toe the line between really realistic and down to earth and also goofy. Because I think that's something that the new Avatar live action series kind of struggles with. Because it's not a cartoon anymore. So you really can't get away with a lot of the things you can in animation.
When you boil it down to writing principles and stuff like that, I mean, the Legend of Zelda is your kind of classic hero's journey. When I was in high school, we had to read Joseph Campbell and learn about the hero's journey and all that stuff. And the teacher kind of beat us over the head with the idea that, well, Star Wars is, you know, it's based on all of Joseph Campbell's stuff. And I'm like, no, fine. If George Lucas really liked this guy and they were best buds, it's perfectly fine. I really don't care. And as I've gotten older, I've started to realize The Legend of Zelda is a classic hero's journey. You know, you start off, there's an old wise man archetype that's in there that helps him go, and the whole story is him learning to become powerful enough to be the hero that he's meant to be. And if you go all the way back to the original Legend of Zelda, that is illustrated by going through increasingly difficult dungeons and getting increasingly mm-hmm. more useful items. And that's how it's gone all the way through, even when we get to the massive departure that the Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom was as far as gameplay loops are concerned. You still have that same hero's journey. You have some wise man that shows up at the very beginning that starts to hint that you are going to be someone incredibly special. And then here, we're going to put you out there and allow you to grow as a hero at your own pace. I think the biggest thing that I feel that the movie needs to do is, I think the easiest way for this movie to fail is to try to put an entire Legend of Zelda game into a movie. I think that would be an absolute epic disaster, because you can't, like, even if we choose a kind of shorter Zelda game, like maybe one of the Game Boy Giga games, they're not nearly as long as something like Ocarina of Time or something. You're still talking about a massive amount of story that you just can't fit into hour and a half, 2 hours. Maybe if they really want to go crazy, they'll go 2.5 hours, but I sincerely doubt any studio would allow you to do that with an experimental film. I think this movie should effectively be like the Light World section of A Link to the Past, or the Young Link section of Ocarina of Time, or a single 3-day cycle dungeon from Majora's Mask. If they try to adapt an entire Zelda game into a single movie, I think it's going to fail. But if they set it up for, hey, we're going to create this movie and we're going to leave it at a bit of a cliffhanger to encourage a sequel, which everybody wants to do right now, I think
you got to have that post credit little Easter egg scene.
I mean, is it really a movie
reveal
if you don't sit through the entirety of the credits just so you can watch the Avengers eat shawarma?
I want to see a post credit scene where it's Tingle and he's just saying cooler than that.
And then just gets in his balloon and floats up.
That's what it is. I think the biggest travesty of the Dungeons and Dragons movie is that they didn't have a post-credit scene where they just went, "Wow, it was super awesome. So when do you guys want to play again?" "Well, I can't play, I'm not busy here." And it turns into like a 5-minute long scene of them just going, "Okay, this is the next thing." And then after that, it goes Dungeons and Dragons 2, summer of 2034.
Oh, no, wait, that's not going to work for me.
Yeah. Fall of 2034.
Oh, I have my sister's wedding is that day. I'm going to have to.
Sometime later.
Pushed.
You don't even need 5 minutes. You just need like the first scene of, okay, so when do we meet? And then just immediately cut to like some kind of conspiracy board trying to figure it out. Anyway, way off topic.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, that's what we need for, again, I think if they decide that, yeah, we're going to make an entire Zelda game into a movie, they're absolutely going to fail.
Yeah.
My worries land with Amanda's in regards to, are they going to try and make it some super serious, epic Lord of the Rings type deal? That was my major concern when I first heard it was going to be live action. I worry about that tone and what it's going to communicate. And it's hard to get that level of whimsy that you need. That's not quite Mario levels of whimsy, but enough fantastical elements that's hard to effectively pull off, particularly in this day and age when it comes to fantasy epics. I've always been advocating that it should have been Japanese anime, but obviously we're not getting that. I do appreciate that the director said that he's trying to go for a Ghibli feel. That's about as much as I could probably hope for. It's just a question of, are they going to be able to do that in live action?
Well, I think that also kind of points to the fact that more likely than not, they're going to be trying to emulate the Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom style of Zelda, because those do have a lot of allusions to the kind of Miyazaki Ghibli style. Whereas, I mean, I would never compare the Ocarina of Time with Spirited Away, despite the fact that both of them have very fantastical elements, or Howl's Moving Castle, I guess, might be an even better comparison. I would never compare those two. But if you go up to the new Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, like there is so much kind of like what are they called? The bloopies? The little...
Oh, the bloopies? Yeah.
Bloopies.
They feel like they were taken directly out of like a Princess Mononoke movie. And there's so many aspects of... what's it? The deer thing that...
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, what is it? Like, yeah. God of the Forest or something like that?
Yeah. Like, that is pure Miyazaki. So I think that, to me, it sounds like that's the feeling they're trying to go, which, again, makes sense from a financial perspective. They are by far the most popular Zelda games that have ever existed. They've sold more copies than I think any other Zelda game by a massive margin. So I guess that makes sense. But then, again, we run into the issue that the plot of Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom is not the thing that people really loved about it. It's not that it was a bad plot. It was a great plot. But the things that people loved about Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, Breath of the Wild was, I can climb everything. And Tears of the Kingdom was, I can build Gundams.
Everything.
Like, those are the things that people loved about those games. And they are phenomenal things. I'm not saying that they were bad. Like, Breath of the Wild was genre breaking and Tears of the Kingdom shouldn't exist. I loved all of the different interviews with industry devs and sitting there just talking about the building system and going, this isn't possible, guys. Right. We have building systems in our games. They don't work like this. This isn't like, you're not supposed to be able to do this, especially not on the Nintendo Switch. These people are warlocks and they made demon packs. That's the only way this happens.
I think that's one of the biggest challenges when it comes to a plot of any video game adaptation is the player participation in a video game is paramount to the experience, regardless of what story you're playing. I could be playing a 50-hour long JRPG, but at the core of that experience is still the fact that I am actively participating in it. And so,
what JRPG are you playing that's only 50 hours?
I'm playing Golden Sun right now, okay?
Okay.
So when you remove that, that's a massive thing that you are taking away from that experience. And so you have to put in something that can equate to that kind of emotional investment, Zelda in particular, I say this all the time, when they're creating a Zelda game, the story is second prerogative, if second, and maybe like fifth down the line. They're more focused on mechanics and how can they create a game with whatever mechanics they're working with. And so to move a story up to the biggest forefront while removing that is a task.
I would push back on that idea in a few particular things. Yes, mechanics tend to be a really, really big part. I mean, we can look at like Skyward Sword to be a kind of perfect example of they built a narrative around a mechanic system. But when you look at stuff like Ocarina of Time or Twilight Princess, I think it's extremely obvious, especially when you look at Ocarina of Time compared to something like A Link to the Past, or really any of the other games that were coming out around the same time, things like Super Mario 64 and stuff like that. When you look at Ocarina of Time, it was designed to be a cinematic experience. And I think a lot of the mechanics were modified to fit that cinematic experience and that story that they were trying to tell. I think it's one of the reasons why Ocarina of Time is so beloved, is because they did want to tell a really amazing story. And you look at it by, you know, the cutscenes that they made were phenomenal for the time. They were unbelievable. And the fact that they put voice acting in there of things like,
hey, listen.
Like, they wanted to tell this really amazing cinematic story, and I think they succeeded. And then they started doing other things, like, I always consider Majora's Mask like an art film. You know, it's just like, well, I wanted to try something different.
Yeah, I call that one a character study.
So it's still a great game, but it's definitely, it is not a huge blockbuster Hollywood movie. It's a little independent film that was wonderful. But then we get back to something like Twilight Princess, and that, I mean, it's blatantly obvious that they wanted you to connect with the characters and they wanted you to be invested in this entire world. I think mechanics didn't start becoming a really big necessary part until we get back to Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, where those games feel like they were built around mechanics.
Twilight Princess very much is like the grandiose, probably the most grandiose the series has ever been. Like Skyward Sword, obviously, it's Link has to find Zelda. It's Tale of Two Lovers kind of thing. But I think in terms of like scale, like big scale, Twilight Princess, it like sits on top as far as like stakes. And this is it. Like this is a movie. I'm playing a movie as close as Zelda gets, at least.
I would love the Zelda movie to take more license from Twilight Princess than it does Tears of the Kingdom, Breath of the Wild stuff. Again, not that they're bad games or anything like that, but I think the storytelling is a little bit weaker, especially when you get to Tears of the Kingdom. Tears of the Kingdom feels much more like a really great game that they happen to have an interesting story that they put into it. Whereas, again, Twilight Princess, you are fueled by the story. Like, there's never a part of Twilight Princess where you're sitting there going, I wonder what the next cool item I'm going to get. It's always like, what's going to happen next? Do I get to be a dog again? What's Midna going through? Wait, Midna's not just a little tiny weird baby thing? What is going on here? Where's Zelda? Why is Zelda here? She's sacrificing herself? What's going on here? Like, that's Twilight Princess.
It's a roller coaster.
Yeah, it's amazing. Very
good. Skyward Sword and Twilight Princess are at the top of my lists of favorite Zelda games, specifically because of their stories and the emotional investment that I end up bringing myself into. So what kind of story then are we going to get? We've touched a little bit on length. Kaden, you already have your hand raised.
This is me raising my hand. I'm a teacher, so I have to. I'm used to doing this.
No, that's fine. Go for it. what do we got?
I really, really think, and the Mario movie did this as well, obviously animated. I really think the best thing for this movie would be to be an amalgamation of different, I call them Zelda-isms, like different things that the Zelda series is known for. I think, yeah, Jody said it, trying to fit one whole Zelda game into a almost two-hour movie, that's just a train wreck waiting to happen. Having it be a sort of, you know, common things happening in Zelda games. Link starts up, has his quest given to him, like, your destiny is this, yada, yada, yada.
But it has to start with Link asleep.
Oh, of course, yeah,
oh, of course. Link is in always bed,
getting woken up.
Opening
by something,
shot is Link
doing little honk shoe action, and then you know, going on a quest, getting the Master Sword, probably like the climax of the movie, and then fighting Ganondorf. The events leading up to those things would be like getting a MacGuffin of sorts, or fighting a interim boss, something like that. I think Breath of the Wild's approach to storytelling could be possibly placed into the movie, just because I would much rather have that in the movie rather than the first 20 minutes are in forest area, the second 20 minutes are in volcano area, the next 20 minutes are in water area, so on and so forth. Take some from each game, kind of put it all into one good experience on the big screen.
And we need a good, memorable soundtrack.
Of course. Oh my gosh. I could talk for days.
That's what I feel music. Like Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild were really lacking. Was just like, it had good music, don't get me wrong, but it just didn't have, because they were going for like ambient sound rather than really catchy songs for each area.
I could talk about that specific topic for hours, but we don't have time for that.
I mean, if you ask someone to sing a song from Ocarina of Time, there's like half a dozen songs that most people will be able to sing from memory right now. If you ask somebody to sing a song from Breath of the Wild, I bet the vast majority of people would go,
I can think of the main theme. That's it.
I would sing the paraglider minigame theme. So,
Music took a massive backseat in both of those Giga games, which again was their prerogative, and they made some great games. But I agree with both of you that we need to have an exceptional soundtrack written by somebody not only that understands the Zelda franchise, but also understands movie scoring. Like, you know, don't get me wrong, I love a lot of video game composers like what is his name? Noboru Uematsu.
Final Fantasy.
There we go. Final Fantasy dude. He's a phenomenal composer. But there's a difference between scoring a video game and scoring a movie. And so I would definitely want to have somebody, like I would love to see score by John Williams. Like that would be super cool. John Williams is a brilliant. And one of the things that George Lucas mentioned working with John Williams was the fact that George Lucas writes his scenes to music. Like he will listen to music when he's writing in scenes to get the tone and everything. And then he'd go to John Williams and go, yeah, I want it to sound kind of like this classical piece because that's what I wrote it to. And then John Williams does it. Mm-hmm. And there are other really exceptionally skilled film composers out there. But I think if they want this to be a success, especially with how linked to music The Legend of Zelda series is, you've got to invest in your soundtrack composer. You've got to, one of my issues with the sequel trilogy in for Star Wars was every Star Wars movie, the musicians that played the music for it was, if I remember correctly, it was the London Symphony Orchestra, one of the finest symphony orchestras in the world. Do you want to know who played the music in the sequel trilogy? Nobody knows. It was a bunch of studio musicians. It was still a full symphony orchestra, but they just got a bunch of studio musicians to do it. And it's not the same as a musician who played in everything from full symphonic orchestras all the way down to jazz combos. Having that relationship with the rest of the musicians in your group changes how things work. So they need, you know, if they're going to do big, awesome music, they need get the, you know, the London... Is it the Philharmonic or is it the... No, it's the London Symphony Orchestra, or get the New York Philharmonic, or get people that know what they're doing with a director that is phenomenal, whether or not you want the composer to direct or not. I mean, John Williams has directed the London Symphony and the New York Philharmonic. Like, you can have guest directors in that, but get people that know what they're doing, that have worked together to create an amazing soundtrack. And I think a lot of other things will start falling into place. Music has a way of just making even mediocre acting and mediocre writing turn into something epic.
Yes. All I have to say,
one of the things that made Star Wars so good is it had that quality to it. Like, I know I keep using the term like whimsical and stuff. Star Wars did that. Like, it did it with the music, it did it with the characters. I think, you know, if we get something along that those lines, at least the original trilogy, and arguably the prequels.
All I have to say is that if there is any licensed music in that movie,
oh my god,
there will be a horrible, horrible decision.
Oh, Link draws his sword. But I this game that I cold, no shall fight for that Michael. You imagine him just slaying moblins to like stay alive? Ha ha ha! Shling, stay alive, stay alive.
What if the rebed? Like,
obviously, it would be I need a hero.
Obviously,
yeah. Perfect.
For the music, the biggest thing when it comes to Zelda music, in my opinion, I'm a music teacher, by the way. That's like I do that, and we've been talking about I've been shilling video game music all semester. Like, that is my biggest goal for these students, is to understand video game music and how powerful it is. The thing I love about Zelda music so much is that it's motivic. There's ideas that are constantly repeated throughout the series in similar situations. One that I think a lot of people don't realize is that in Breath of the Wild, whenever you take Link to visit the Great Deku Tree, the same motif can be heard that you hear in Wind Waker when you see the Great Deku Tree. Da 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 bum 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 ba da 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 di da bum bum bim bum, which is also Kokiri Forest.
Mm-hmm.
So it follows throughout the entire series, and that's something I think the movie very much needs. The Mario movie does this extremely well, and it was also supervised by Koji Kondo, I believe, right?
Yes.
Hopefully, they can get him to do that again with the Zelda with the Zelda movie, and just follow through with that same exact thing. Turning these beloved themes, motifs, into a full movie score that matches the scenarios going on. That is my number one hope. Number one.
I think it's probably one of the biggest things they can do to contribute towards that tone that we're looking for the Zelda franchise. Here's a fun little thing, as I was thinking about, as you were talking about, like, 20 minutes in the desert, 20 minutes in that. Let's look at the components then of Zelda, and what groups do we want to see?
Oh, like peoples?
Yeah, like peoples.
Oh.
Or maybe references, or maybe we want to go references, specific side characters, even if they're not like actually, oh, there's Midna. More like, oh, there's reference that I can understand. What would you like to see in there?
Not my number one, but something that I just thought of was like, what if they're walking through a town or something and you see like Linebeck's boat shop or something like that?
I think that'd be
something pretty cool.
I want somebody just to say, hey, listen.
Oh, of course.
There's just a pivotal moment where Link is doing something. He's like, no, we got to do this. And finally his sidekick, whatever they decide to, just goes, Link, hey, listen. I think that'd be a great nod.
I feel like the best way to pull that off would be like some kind of trainer. Link is distracted by something and whoever has just kind of lost their patience. Like, hey, listen.
Yeah. I don't know how they would pull it off and make it fit the tone, but well, excuse me, princess. I fully expect it to be in the movie.
That's got to be there somewhere.
I don't know how they would do it, though.
I don't know how they would do it.
If they made Zelda kind of bossy in her, like, getting mad at something and then, like, just being, well.
Oh, gosh, that's something that we haven't even touched on yet either. Characterization. Because, yes, it's, oh, there's Princess Zelda, but is Princess Zelda being portrayed correctly?
Yeah, because, I mean, there's so many ways she has been like, portrayed.
She's had a lot of different personalities over the years, but I still feel
like the stoic one from Twilight Princess. We've got Pirate Princess. Pirate Princess is always cool. We've got the perfect cheerleader in Skyward Sword.
Ouch.
And then, what? Perfect cheerleader? That's a good thing.
I have two thoughts. The first one, I think the sort of mystique behind Ocarina of Time Zelda also being chic, I think that might fit a movie situation really well. Also, Spirit Tracks. I know, Amanda, you don't like Spirit Tracks.
Oh, Spirit Tracks Zelda is so good. She's my second favorite.
She's a great character. I'll give it that.
I love Spirit Tracks with a flaming passion. It is in my top five Zelda games.
Nice.
The way that game treats Zelda, I think, is brilliant. And having her be not necessarily a damsel in distress, because honestly, Zelda usually isn't really a damsel in distress until like the end. She's not the same as Peach in this case.
Even when she's in danger, I would never classify her as damsel in distress.
Mm-mm. Yeah. And in Spirit Tracks' case, I think using in the movie some sort of like Zelda's with you for quite a bit of the movie with Link. I say with you, like it's a game. Zelda's with Link from a good bit of the movie. And then somehow they get separated. She appears at the end of the movie, like, I don't know, something like that. But having her be sort of like a partner to Link for quite a bit of the movie, I think would be really, really, really cool to see.
Well, I think if we look, again, if we go all the way back to the original Legend of Zelda, Zelda was only a quote-unquote damsel in distress in the idea that she lets Link do the heavy lifting for that part of the adventure. But before The Legend of Zelda starts, Zelda is already the ruler of her country, and she broke the Triforce of Wisdom.
Yep.
Like, she was never a passive... From the very beginning, Zelda has never been a passive participant in The Legend of Zelda. She is always the inciting incident that does everything until something happens that she can't take care of herself. And then when we start getting into the more interesting things, like... The Zelda and Ocarina of Time is in no way a passive participant. She is plotting and scheming from the first time you go into the castle, and then becomes becomes an active participant and fighter in this rebellion. You look at Twilight Princess Zelda, and she's literally holding down the fort on her own. And then when we look at, again, I think there's a lot of signs to point that we're going to get a Breath of the Wild movie. When we look at the Breath of the Wild flavor of Zelda, she is an active participant in everything. She is constantly fighting and doing things, especially when you look at the Age of Calamity flavor of her, where she just becomes incredibly badass.
Well, she has a full-on character arc, which we don't often see. I mean, we kind of see them with other Zeldas, but she has a very different one because she's such a complex character, because she's flawed and she's aware of that, and that's Zelda's biggest struggle in Breath of the Wild, is just overcoming her own insecurities.
Yeah, I think Zelda probably has the best and most complete character arc in Breath of the Wild of any of the characters.
Yeah.
Like Zelda doesn't, I mean, Link basically doesn't have a character arc because
Link's just getting his memory back.
Like you are Link. So the character arc of Link is your personal character arc that you impart onto him. But Zelda has a really amazing, complex motivation throughout the entire thing, and the relationship she has with Link and the other champions. It's a really great, interesting story that the other champions just don't get. Like, they have some minor character development that gets expanded in Age of Calamity, but for the most part, Breath of the Wild is the Zelda story starring Link.
I imagine that Zelda's characterization is probably going to depend mostly on how much we're still doing it. How much Link spends with her and how much Zelda is spent on screen. If we go with a more Zelda-centric story and she's there front and center, she's going to have a little bit more of a vivacious kind of direct personality so that people can really get attached to her. While Breath of the Wild is Zelda's story, Skyward Sword is Link's story. And in that regard, Zelda becomes much more of a distant figure. This is the goal I'm reaching towards. Or in something like Twilight Princess, where she is almost mystical in her presentation because of her status and her powers in relationship that we, as Link in that game, really don't see.
Well, I think if we look at writing trends currently in Hollywood, I don't think it's possible for us to have a Skyward Sword style Zelda in this. Like, it would go again, like, girl power and, you know, girls are taking over the world and everything. That's the theme of Hollywood right now. You know, the MCU, all that stuff. It's not going particularly well because, again, we have bad writers, but
the MCU is its own Same. Yeah.
But I mean, I think a story of Link and Zelda working together to triumph over something could, I think, is significantly more likely to be the plot that we do get. Because again, I think that's
kind of the route of like Princess Bride with it.
Yeah, that would be a very, very cool, because that's another thing that no one would ever consider Buttercup to be a damsel in distress. Like she is very, very authoritative, and she takes the reins in quite a few different situations, and she's just not an action hero, but she's still very much the main character of her own story. So that would be very, very cool. But I don't know if I would compare Wesley to Link. I think Wesley's far too confident to be a Link.
If they do decide to go with the Breath of the Wild approach, because Breath of the Wild plus Tears of the Kingdom, these two games are like the most about Princess Zelda the series has ever been. It feels like The Legend of Zelda, like actually, like the title of the series. If they do decide to go that route, I wouldn't mind it. But I feel like a lot of the people that go to see this movie are expecting a movie version of the game that they play as Link, not Zelda. And so you basically have to like pick, you know, do you want this to be about Zelda, like the series suggests, and how Breath of the Wild, the most popular game in the series, has kind of depicted, or do you want to do like the regular classic by the book Zelda experience from the games? I would much more like to see Link and Zelda working together. I think that's perfect.
I think that the funny thing is that we're talking, I agree that would be a great dynamic to try and put together, get that right chemistry. I also find it kind of funny that we're finally getting like active Zelda and we don't get to play as her still.
Yep.
Because it's in a movie.
We can only dream, I guess.
Again, Age of Calamity exists. Zelda is absolutely awesome in that game.
I am in the middle of 100%ing the original Hyrule Warriors. I am very well aware.
So we'll see you in like 7 years?
Something like that. It's my Monday stream, basically, is Hyrule Warriors.
Godspeed.
The game is super, super fun, but dear Lord.
There's way too much content. It has like
4,000 hours worth of content. I mean, there are epic poets that could take lessons from how to drag things on.
Well, it's not even because to get everything done is not even the story. The story you can get done in like, I want to say 16 hours, 20 hours.
If you're just doing the story, like you can get that done in 5-6 hours.
Yeah. It's everything else. It's why Hyrule Warriors and Minish Cap are the only two I've yet to 100%.
Those damn stones.
Stupid Kinstone. Oh, let's have a Kinstone reference in the movie.
Yes, let's have the entire guy, instead of basing it around, you know, the hero's journey or something, let's turn Kinstone fusing into like a TCG kind of thing and basically make this a Yu-Gi-Oh! Style movie where he's trying to be the best Kinstone fuser like no one ever was. Like, when they fuse, they start spinning. And it turns into Beyblade. And like, let's get all of the 90s anime TV series and shove it into one. Gotta Kinstone them all.
Oh, stop.
The first movie to sell a Zeldillion dollars. Yeah. Zeldillion tickets. I have a question, a query for you all, if you will.
Okay.
I was thinking about this while we were talking about Hyrule Warriors for like 2 minutes. What unseen event from Zelda lore would you like to see kind of referenced in this movie? Something that happened like off screen in the past in a flashback.
Mm-hmm. I want a legitimate ceiling war to show up. Mm. Like we had reference to it in Ocarina of Time. We've had, they reference a completely different ceiling war in Tears of the Kingdom, but I want an actual ceiling war event to show up, even if it's just a flashback, you know, kind of like the last alliance of men and elves in the Fellowship of the Ring, where your opening scene is the ceiling war, and you have a really cool narrator is talking about, much has happened, but there are few who remember.
Ba-da, ba-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah. I was going through Ocarina of Time and trying to flesh out a story to make it more kind of a cinematic experience than the game itself. And I remember coming back from Zora's Domain to trigger Ocarina of Time, the time skip, all that stuff. And I was thinking out of my head basically the events of what happens when Ganondorf invades Hyrule Castle and everything that would have to happen in there with Link, with Zelda and Impa making their grand escape. It's like kind of I'm like picturing in my head this back and forth of Link going and talking with Navi about how great it's going to be. We've done this thing. Maybe we'll be like heroes and there'll be a triumphant return. And like paralleling it is Ganondorf walking in, invading everything. And there's all kinds of chaos going on. And I think having the benefit of not being perpetually glued to Link and being able to see all the events that are happening around him. Because usually when Link gets involved in the adventure, we kind of touched on already, everything else has already been going on for a long time. Twilight Princess is a great example. The entire nation had already been covered in Twilight before Link ever gets on the scene. Mm-hmm. So being able to see all of the inciting events before we get to Link can make just a dramatic introduction.
Yeah. As well as seeing Link's family.
Assume he's not going to be an orphan? Well, Link has every other game.
Link just springs up out of the ground.
He could still lose them at the beginning, like an intro 5 minutes. I'm just saying, I would like to see.
He's dropped off at the. We can see him getting dropped off at the Great Deku Tree.
Exactly.
What's the most dangerous profession in any adventure story?
Being a parent. Yep. I think there was like a theory. I don't know where I remember hearing this, but there's a theory that like maybe Link's dad was in the Great War. That his mother was escaping from.
Mm-hmm. I remember that theory.
Something like that. That war between the Hyrule and I think it was.
No named antagonist. It was. It was before the king unified the land. So I think it was a civil war.
Right.
But technically, that wouldn't be it was a war of unification, effectively, as Hyrule was basically taking over everything.
True. Conquest!
Love to see it. You love to see it.
Hyrulean Revolution.
I think all of us has gotten this wrong, and the movie is just going to be the happy mask salesman setting up his economic empire.
No. It's not the happy mask salesman. It's Tingle setting up his economic empire. Tingle
got his weird like Tingle trafficking thing going on in Wind Waker.
Oh, yeah. Poor David Jr., man.
Man, Dave.
Poor David Jr., That poor guy.
So, yeah, I think we're going to hear the term return on investment constantly in the movie and economic forces. And like, if they don't have like two or three SWOT analysis, I'm just not going to the movie. Like, I'm done with it right then.
Okay.
I have a business degree that I've never used, folks. So this is the only time. Let's talk about Porter's five forces.
Gotta use it when you can.
All right, let's close this off with outlandish predictions. Is there any like pie in the sky? It's never ever going to happen, but if it did, it would be amazing and or hilarious.
I got it. I'm raising my hand. Final battle. Link goes to draw his sword, but he pulls out a fishing rod by accident.
I was gonna say a bottle.
Or a bottle.
That too, yeah. Maybe both, I don't know. But as he does it, Ganondorf gets somehow enamored with it. He's like, wow, what is this technology? And then he puts it away and gets a sword. Something like that.
I'm predicting Al Pacino as Ganondorf, Dustin Hoffman as King Hyrule, and some no-name actor for Link, with Zelda being played by Posh Spice.
Posh Spice?
Yep, Victoria Beckham.
Okay.
We didn't even talk about casting.
We did not. I specifically avoided it. I have specifically avoided it because I do not know actors or actresses, so I would have literally nothing to contribute, and I'm scared of looking at any actor because no one fits my mental image of what any of these characters look like.
That is completely valid.
Thanks, Connor.
Everybody knows Amanda's going to be Zelda. I mean,
I'm sorry.
I don't have to be Zelda. Look, Amanda, as long as I'm in it.
Yeah, please let us know when you get cast.
I think I'm too old and wrinkly to be Zelda.
You're not wrinkly. No.
I don't know. I've seen some fine
lines. I'm sorry. Kate Blanchett is playing the siren from Borderlands.
As someone who's never played Borderlands, that trailer looked amazing.
Yeah, it did.
Yes, but what is the character's name? I can't remember the character's name because I'm bad with names. But the character, Lilith, that's her name. The character in Borderlands is like early 20s, and Kate Blanchett is in her mid-50s. So if Kate Blanchett can play a character in her early 20s, anyone can play anyone. That's how it works.
That has been the reasoning behind some very horrible casting decisions. Just saying.
Indeed. As long as I see... beautiful Gerudo women. I am.
I want them in my life. Please.
I need that expeditiously.
There's a reason Urbosa controls lightning and thunder. It's for those thoughts.
Not going to lie. The first time I saw Lady Urbosa, I was like, you know, this makes me not hate my thunder thighs as much.
There you go.
Gonna love it.
Oh, Gerudo. So good. Actually, I think, I don't know how pie in the sky this is, but one of my favorite conclusions to a boss battle, Spirit Tracks, Maladus, when you have both Link and Zelda doing the final blow.
Yes.
I freaking love that scene. Give me that in the movie. Have them both kill Ganon.
Link and Zelda to kiss. As long as Link and Zelda kiss, I'm happy.
Please.
I think the most outlandish thing that I think could possibly happen in a weird parallel dimension is I want Link to be an actual silent protagonist. Throughout the movie, I don't want Link to say a damn thing.
You know what? I would love that.
Really interesting. Interesting movie.
Yes.
It would require storytelling techniques that are extremely different than what they're using right now. Like it would definitely be a pioneering movie if they could have an actual literal silent protagonist.
Just cast a mute actor. That'll make it so easy.
Honestly, growing up, I thought Link always was mute. I didn't know what that term meant.
Couldn't talk. Yeah.
Right. Huh. I didn't put two and two together for that. But yeah, I think that'd be pretty cool.
Link doesn't actually speak in either Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom, right? I can't remember because they have actual voice acting in that.
But I mean, he has dialogue options.
There are references to him saying things, like he's the one who teaches Zelda how to best work with her horse. There is a cutscene in Twilight Princess where Link and Ilya are speaking to each other. There's just no dialogue, so you don't know what they're actually saying.
Skyward Sword, when Headmaster Gabora asks where Zelda went after she got fell down to the clouds.
And Link is explaining stuff.
He's explaining things, but words aren't being heard.
Yep. So Link has said things. Actually, if we want to go even further back, Adventure of Link, there is quite literally, I found a mirror under the table. Link has said words.
A little bit of first-person dialogue.
But I think that would be a really, really amazing. It'd be a great nod to the fans. And again, it would be like I've gotten to the point now, and I've talked about this when I talk about like RPGs and stuff like that, or tabletop RPGs. I've gotten to the point where I have kind of absorbed the kind of normal stuff that everybody. I was an actor for many, many years, and so I understand, you know, the normal acting craft. The stuff that really gets me excited about a movie or a TV show is not, oh, there's going to be this really epic scene or something like that. It's, wow, they're trying a completely different way to frame this movie, or they're trying a completely different style of acting in order to be able to do this. Or in tabletop RPGs, you know, they're using a completely different system that's not just roll a d20 and add a number to it. You know, those are the things that get me excited. And so if we could have a Legend of Zelda that brings in aspects of like experimental filmmaking where you're like, no, I'm going to try something different. I'm going to try to tell this story in a way that hasn't been told before. That to me would be the most amazing thing that we can get from it. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think that would bare minimum, even if everything else fails, if they tried and could succeed at telling a story in a completely new and unique way, that would make it a timeless movie that will exist long after this craze of making video game movies starts to die down.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would really make it at least like stand out as sort of like a, I don't want to say experiment, that makes it sound bad, but I mean like make it stand out as like sort of an art piece, kind of like, oh, this is a unique technique we're going to use. Let's see if it works. And hopefully, ideally it would. At the very least though, if they want to make him talk, I just request that it be minimal. Like one word answers, kind of sort of like, I want to say Cloud from Final Fantasy VII Remake. He doesn't talk often. He's not talkative at all, but when he does, it's usually very short responses, very low, quiet. I don't care.
So you want Link to become a brooding hero? Got it.
Not necessarily in tone.
Dot, right?
What? A lot of ellipses.
No. I know one of
them. He is now Squall Leonhardt.
Right. not necessarily in tone, obviously, but like, you know, in terms of like level of talkativeness, not a lot.
We're trying to recapture the essence of a franchise that, despite being around for over 35 years now. Holy cow.
Yeah.
I think we're 38 old.
38 years.
38, that's 38 years. My gosh. 38 years.
No, just 38. It just turned 38.
I know, but still, that's 38 years of exposure that should lead these creators to be able to understand if they are, like we've said, passionate about this series. What makes Zelda Zelda? And if they're able to capture that, whatever techniques or acting strategies or even experiments that are necessary, I think that is what is going to make this a true success as we are trying to define it for this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, on that note, though, Les Miserables was first published in 1862, and they were still able to butcher aspects of the movie in the 2010s. So, I mean, simply existing for a long time doesn't mean that they're going to do it justice.
Oh, I have. That's true. I have seen like a 2-hour documentary about how much of a train wreck that movie was.
The movie is not bad. Russell Crowe is not a singer. Phenomenal actor. Not a singer.
He has a band, and it's apparently a good band.
He probably is. As a musician, I don't think he's bad, but he is not a Broadway singer, which is what Javert... I played the role of Javert in high school. It is a remarkably difficult role to play. It is very difficult vocally, especially the operatic nature of it, where you're literally singing for 3 hours. Yeah. Like, it's a very, very difficult role to do. But yeah, anyway, I had to get my little dig in there.
Okay. Well, let's looking at the time, everyone, thank you so much for being here and taking part in this discussion of our upcoming Zelda movie. We're probably not going to get it for a couple of years at least.
Oh God, no, maybe like 9 years.
Who knows?
Or it's going to go Acme versus Wile E. Coyote and they'll film the entire thing and then shelve it.
And
that
we will.
Like most of the projects I've been on.
We will riot. But everyone, thank you so much. All of you listeners, thank you for joining us. Jody, Amanda, Caden, appreciate so much your participation, your thoughts, your jokes. We've had a few of those.
A little bit.
Thank you all for listening to the Zelda Universe podcast, and we will check you out next time.